I'll tell you something I love about being in France, in addition to some seriously delicious butter, and that is the wide selection of wines I can find in France for low prices. It can be much more difficult to source those same bottles back in the States, and that's why I love to buy wines out of France with Ideal Wine. I have bottles shipped to me, hassle-free. It's easy. Ideal Wine has a new auction every week and is a great source for iconic names like Ouette, Louis Roeder, and Domaine Lefleuve, as well as rising stars like Arnaud Lachaud, Gonon, and Tissot. Find the wines you'd rather be drinking at idealwine.com. That's IDEALWINE.com and have the wine shipped to you in the States. Use the promo code FIRST, FIRST, for $15 off your first order of $150 or more. Hey, that's $15 you could save, and that is some good butter money. See for yourself at Ideal Wine.
I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
In the 1880s, if you were looking for great Nebbiolo, you'd be looking to northern Piedmont, in particular to the regions of Gemme, Gattinara, Lasona, and Bramaterra. If you lived in Milan in the 19th century, you'd want to be serving these wines with dinner. In the mid-1800s, Piedmont wines were popular in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but in the 1840s, the tariffs on their export to Austrian-controlled lands doubled, which cut off Piedmont from its export market. This was the first of many tribulations for the North Piedmont wine market. But after World War II, other businesses, like the textile industry, sprung back to life, but not the vineyards. Most of the vineyards have since been reclaimed by forest. Why was the wine industry the last to start its comeback? In post-war days, a quick profit likely meant a sustainable business because many businesses were starting from scratch without the momentum of capital that sustains long-term industries. But as most people who listen to this podcast know, a new winery or vineyard takes many years of effort before the first vintage can be released to market. And in particular, the long-lived wines of Lasona, and especially Bramaterra, would need even longer to be enjoyed and thus praised by consumers. So someone looking to start up a business after World War II would likely look for something that could return their investment in a year or less. Also, if you think of the psychology of business, imagine if you were such a person, in such a time, with just enough money left to start up a business after World War I. Your grandparents may still talk about the good old days before World War I. Your parents in particular recall the horrors of World War I, and your mom may even be a widow. Many of your friends have died in the World War II battles, and you've likely watched them in your own fight. You've probably been in a few hand-to-hand mortal combats yourself. You're very aware of the greater world, of other countries, and of how you fit into the greater scheme of things. But by now, you and your countrymen are weary of fighting, and you feel like cogs in some sort of giant political game. You're sick of fighting, and you're ready to rebuild. Your hometown's population was decimated, and though your family likely had some kind of wealth before the war, now there's really just enough for you to get back on your feet. The prospect of a global business market is a tenuous one, and peace must seem elusive in the long run. Investors are not jumping at the idea of going into business in your market. Why invest in a long-term business when your lifetime was plagued by multiple wars? It seems, if you have money to invest after World War I, that it would do best in any business but the wine business, where the return can sometimes be decades away, increasing your possibilities of bankruptcy in the meantime. You only get one shot at this. The production of items with a quick turnaround, textiles, for instance, make much more sense in an unstable economy. Looms, textiles, and dyes, these are also things that can be moved if the fighting starts up again. Vines, not so much. This mentality and the loss of so much life, and with it, knowledge of vineyards and vines, made this once thriving area a ghost land of wine. Taking a walk through a forest could easily be a stroll through what was once a great vineyard of the area. Today, so many of them are just gone without a trace. Take, for instance, these statistics. Before World War II, La Sona once claimed over 300 hectares of vines, and today it has less than 20. Before World War II, some estimate that Bramaterra's vineyards counted more than 2,000 hectares, but in 2014, there were only 30 hectares. Combined, the regions of La Sona and Bramaterra have about 2% of the vineyards they once had. 2%. These wines need time to age. One wine writer says, "It should be considered a sin to open a bottle of Bramaterra before 10 years old." And if you are lucky enough to find an old bottle of Bramaterra before its DOC making in 1979, you'll see the bottles labeled simply as Spana, the North Piedmont's nickname for Nebbiolo. Today, there's some renewed investment in the area and energy being put into these once popular areas of the Northern Piedmonte. Just how fast can these mountains be replanted?
It's not enough to make great wine. You also have to reach the consumer that appreciates that wine. And that's where Offset is an incredible asset. Offset is an independent brand design and commerce technology company that connects with wineries on a human level to help them connect with consumers on a human level. Offset is based in wine country and staffed by creative strategists and technologists who are superb at helping create and evolve wine brands through visual identity and package design, developing the look, feel, and tone of your web content, as well as building beautiful and effective websites powered by their proprietary e-commerce platform, Offset Commerce. That's why leaders like Frog's Leap, Grace Family Vineyards, and Rain Winery already rely on Offset. Reach out to the brilliant team at Offset at offsetpartners.com. That's OFFSET partners with an S.com. Offset is focused on the wine industry and can embrace the nuanced needs of your wine brand.
Christiana Garella of Colombera and Garella in the Alto Piemonte, as well as consulting work for a number of other wineries in that region. Hello, sir. How are you?
Very fine. Thank you.
You got started in winemaking in the Alto Piemonte at a fairly young age.
Yeah, I started in 2002. And at that time, I was 18 years old and was my first vintage. I started before as a wine passionate, obviously.
So you were drinking wine from a pretty young age.
Yeah, when I was 13, I started drinking wine, tasting wines, visiting wineries, and then I want to start making wine. It was very easy, natural, was natural path.
Was your family had a history of winemaking?
No. My mother was a municipality secretary, and my father a gymnastic teacher. So I was not strictly connected to winemaking. And anyway, Northern Piedmont in that period was not an important wine growing region. So it was quite strange at the beginning. But
because I think now, at least in the United States market, we talk a lot about the Alto Piemonte.
Yeah.
But maybe you saw that change where it was maybe less fashionable and now it started to gain some momentum in the last couple of years?
I think it was very different. Just a few years ago, just 15 years ago, 16 years ago, was completely different because Northern Piedmont was only sleeping. Few producers were left. And so only in the last 10 years, 15 years, there is this kind of new renaissance of Northern Piedmont with new investments, new producers, a lot of old restored vineyard. And so this is the most important thing about Northern Piedmont, I think, today.
That must have been pretty exciting to be a young guy and see an area that's going through a renaissance.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very happy about that. I'm very also proud because it's my territory anyway. And I like the place where I am. But the beginning was strange because we were just the Northern Piedmont, the other Piedmont, not the Piedmont of Nebbiolo, not the Piedmont known by Barbaresco producer and Lange and obviously the top names of Italian winemaking. So it was different because for a while, for some years, everybody was looking for Piemontese only as secondary wine areas. And I think now it's completely different.
What sort of set the stage for a difference?
One for sure was Paolo De Marchi investments in Northern Piedmont as Proprietà Sperino, who was able to bring some other people investing in Northern Piedmont, as are Christoph Künzli of Le Piane, Dieter Euschel of Le Pianelle, where I work. And so I think this was one of the important, most important points. Then the other side was some very old estate, but very interesting estate, as are Antoniolo, Sella, Travaglini, and some others, Cantalupo, at that period were changing a little bit, changing not the winemaking, but only their mind. They were more open than before. And then the last thing was a new generation of young people coming to the wine world, to viticulture, because wine industry was starting to decrease a lot in that period. And so some guys want to just find something to do, and they want to restore maybe the property of the grandfather or the grand-grandfather. So this was the beginning in 2002-2003, that period. Now, after a few years, it's completely different. There are new vineyards, there are much more new wineries, and also the little by little the landscape is starting to be again as it was before, little by little. Before, you know that Northern Piedmont was 40,000-45,000 hectares of vineyard, so around 150,000 acres, and was one of the few areas where you could find bottles since 1850, 1848, and was quite unusual to label the bottles in that period. For sure, I drank bottles of Lessona 1840, 1845, 1848, but also you could find some Gattinara and Gamma as well. It also Boca.
So it must be, I mean, for me, I would think that that would be pretty cool if I was like 13, 14, 15, 16 and drinking wine that was over 100 years old or even closer to 200 years old.
Yeah. But also was a little bit, we are a little bit sorry about that because we are not at that level now. So if we want to be very important in the future, we must work harder. Help new people investing in Bavaria, help new people creating new vineyard, and this is the only way. We need more producer, we need more vineyard, we need more wines, because we need to refine our roots, rediscover how make exactly wines in Northern Piedmont, which are the best crews in Northern Piedmont. So this is mostly about Boca, Lessona, Bramaterra area. So where you lost more vineyard than in Gattinara or Gemme, because in Gattinara and Gemme, some very important producers are just left also during that period.
So in a way, it's sort of recovering a kind of a lost wine civilization.
Exactly.
A lot of it has to do with reclaiming vineyards that no longer exist, that have maybe become forest or scrub brush.
Exactly.
Or...
this is what it is now also. Now it's changing, but it's still... there are few vineyards and a lot of trees, for sure. A few weeks ago, I was with my girlfriend and our dogs going through some years not far in Bramaterra region. Okay, it was just a normal walk during afternoon, and I found a old property. It's a historic hill, a small house on top, and you could see, you could... smell the place, but that was for sure a great place for make wine, because they worked so hard for create the terraces and everything, but now was just trees. So maybe will be the next step in Northern Piedmont. But anyway, you could find now some vineyard, some restored vineyard, but also a lot of years where you could find only trees, and you must work hard to have again vineyard back.
Historically, it was an area where there was a lot of wine production.
Yeah.
But what happened to change that? Was it phylloxera? Was it economics?
For sure, you must imagine the beginning of the 20th century, so 1904, 1905. 1904, in Northern Piedmont, you had one of the biggest storms in that period, and was able to destroy completely that vintage, but also decrease a lot of the production of the 1905.
This was like a hailstorm?
Or? Yeah, exactly. It's quite usual to have hail in our area, but before maybe it was also more usual. So in that period, this was one of the things. Then Lesona, Biella, Vallemosso, but also all Gattinara again, are one of the most important industrial area for wool cashmere. And a lot of workers, after a big hail problem, just moved because they need a salary every month, and it's much easier. Not easy, but it's different anyway.
But I feel like when I've gone through the Alto Piemonte recently, what I've seen is that the textile factories, they seem abandoned often. I think that the competition from other countries has really decimated that industrial sector for that part of Italy.
Yeah, I think this is one side, I think. Now, 20 years ago was different. 20 years ago, the industry started to have a lot of problems with China, and so a lot of workers just were fired or just they need to find another place. And this is one another aspect now for have new or old workers and find again the possibility and the time to restore the grandfather estate or the grandfather vineyard. But before, at the beginning of 20th century back, for sure these two things, plus the Phylloxera, Peronospora, and Oidium, were the aspect to destroy year by year 95% of the viticulture in Northern Piedmont.
I mean, 95% is a big number.
It's a big number.
You know.
But it's much more important than 5% left.
So when I visit some wineries in the Alto Piemonte, especially like Gattinara, the fermenting tanks are gigantic, like huge cement tanks. I imagine there's just a lot of volume made at that time.
Exactly.
Now often they're just silent, ancient ruins or monuments.
If you check the numbers of that period, if you check the numbers also in 1920, so 15 years after that big hail, you could see a lot of production. For example, Brusnengo, now is a tiny municipality with three wineries now. 10 years ago, were just one. And in 1904, the production was around 75,000 bottles. In 1923, was around 60,000 bottles. Now is every year we are recovering a little bit, but now is 10 to 15,000 bottles. In Gemme, they were able to produce almost 1 million of bottles only in Gemme. And if you check the numbers, it's quite strange. And if you could see that kind of tank, that kind of hook, the first and the biggest Cantina Sociale Cav Cooperative in Italy was in Northern Piedmont, was in Fara, and was the biggest one. And now it's just absurd to tell, no? So this is why you could see this kind of concrete or oak tank so huge.
And I've seen vineyards where it seems like not a lot is happening with them. I mean, they're planted a vine still, but it seems like the people have sort of no time for the vineyards in places like Fara.
Yeah. I think Northern Piedmont is going with different velocity, and there are some very sparkling appellations as are Lesona, Bocca, Gattinara, and now Bramaterra, and some a little bit late. And we need to work and to find the right guys, as are, for example, Gilberto Boniperti in Fara or Francesca Castaldi in Fara, because they trust and they believe in the place where they are. And so they want to restore little by little. But for recreate a vineyard, you need time. For example, with Le Pianelle, for restore 1 hectare, Dieter had to do 39 different acts to rebuy the land and to restore the vineyard. So for buy 39 different pieces, 40 meters, 100 meters, you need a lot of time. And so sometimes this is why it's not exactly easy and exactly fast. It's very easy to lose a vineyard, but for restore a vineyard, we need a long time.
Set the stage for me in terms of the place. There are a number of communes. Where are they? How do they relate? And what's grown there? What's the situation with those different places?
Northern Piedmont is one of the biggest areas for different municipality appellation. You could find Fara, Sezzano, Gattinara, Gemme, Bocca, Lesona, and then Bramaterra. Was just because the Cluny monks from Burgundy during the 11th and 20th century moved to our area, improve the quality of viticulture and helping the historic vine growers, they find some different possibility to share the territory and to see how could be a single Fara, a single vineyard of Fara. There are some single vineyards also in unknown places as Arsun or Briona. Montziflon was a very historic vineyard of another producer and is planted since 800 years. This is why you could find so many different places. How could be related? For sure, if you think about Northern Piedmont, you must think about a cooler climate place with a lot of rain, with an acidic pH soil. This is the most important aspect in Northern Piedmont, I think. So you could think about Gattinara and Bramaterra as a very, very volcanic appellation. You could think sandy soil as Arlesona. You must think about alluvial morainic soil in Gemme and then in Fara and Sizzano with a little bit more fertile, a little bit richer, a little bit darker, with less iron. And then Bocca is a mix between Gemme and Gattinara, so it's volcanic, but you could find also some morainic and alluvial places.
Because there's some granite in
Yeah, it's true.
Bocca,
it's true.
Right?
Yeah, it's right.
Is it typical in the Alto Piemonte wine community to talk about soil type? Because I feel like in a lot of Italian regions, it's usually the last part of the conversation.
I think, you know, for me, is must be the first, because it's like the most important thing to know, and is why all the different appellations are so different and the wines are so different.
So historically, were people blending across zones to put soil types together, or was it more just inside of one soil type when they were doing bottlings?
Historically, we are only single or single vineyard or single appellation, but mostly single soil type.
And the consumer was in Italy, or it was for export? Or
as Sella, when it was Sella, we know that we had the wines in the US since 1864. Sperino, for sure, in the same period, but also some other producer. So historically, the customers were not only local, were for all Europe and also US.
I think it's common when we think about Piemonte in America, we think, oh, you know, wines from Nebbiolo. You know, obviously there's Dolcetto and Barbera, yeah, but sure. When we think of Barolo, Barbaresco, we think Nebbiolo. And I think there's a tendency to say like, oh, the Alto Piemonte where they grow Nebbiolo and they make wines from Nebbiolo. But actually, it's often a cocktail blend of a couple of different grape varieties that are pretty different, actually.
Yeah, sure.
So what is that situation with grape varieties and the Alto Piemonte as a whole?
Nebbiolo, for sure, is the most important variety. And historically was. We had a single appellation only for the Nebbiolo. Then you could find a lot of different varieties. I have some vineyards since 20 years with more than 22 different varieties. Very local varieties, very unique varieties, but anyway, 22 varieties. Maybe because of the weather before was very, very cold, and so you need to have an average production for something. So you must have only the Nebbiolo for the top wine, and the average blend was for the normal base wine. So it's true now you could find very few varieties back. So you could find Vespolina and Cratina and Nebbiolo in some different blend or Uvarara. But anyway, before you could find a little bit more varieties. You know, maybe I really like Vespolina. It's one of my favorite varieties in Northern Piedmont, but was very unknown very few years ago. When I started in 2006 making wine at Sella, was completely different. It was just a secondary variety used for base wine and everything. Then, obviously, working with the University of Turin, we knew a little bit more about the Vespolina, and we learned that the skins are ripe at the harvest, but the seeds are still green. And so if you make just a medium normal maceration, 10 days, you could find only a bitter wine. Not very, very red, just a little bit aromatic and bitter. Then, working with longer maceration, you could polymerize this kind of tannins. And so, this was, for me, was quite important because it was a way for find a connection between a Vespolina and the Nebbiolo, and find the possibility to age well the Vespolina, because it's very easy to oxidize, and so you must be very careful with oxygen and working with long maceration. You have a little bit of tannins, but you have more protection anyway, so your wine will be much more safer. Vespolina is, for me, one of the most important varieties in Northern Piedmont, for sure. Croatina is a little bit different, is a little bit more rustic. You could find Croatina not in all the appellation of Northern Piedmont. For sure, you have to vinify separately, I think. And it's completely different than Nebbiolo and Vespolina. It's no relatives at all. In Croatina, you have a less acidity, you have a higher pH, you have more fruitiness. It's important for some appellation for the back mouth, for the saltiness, because it's a reductive grape variety, and so you could express better this kind of iron bloodiness in the back mouth, quite typical in some of the appellation in Northern Piedmont. So Croatina is an interesting variety. You could find some Maggiorina Croatina very interesting, because it's very ripe, made by all very old vines. But anyway, it's a harder variety for me.
What do those wines taste like? You said Croatina is more rustic, and yeah. You said Vespolina has a lot of tannins. But in terms of flavor profile, I mean, if I were to drink a wine made from those grape varieties on its own, you know, sometimes you see it, would that taste like?
The nose of Vespolina is based on white pepper, because the molecule of the white pepper is exactly the same of the Vespolina, the Rotondone. So you could find a little bit of berries. If you macerate enough, you could find the raspberries, the strawberries for sure at the nose, and white pepper. So it's very linear, it's very spicy, it's very easy to recognize. If you ferment a tank of Vespolina after 2 hours of after the harvest, you could say 100% this is a Vespolina. Green tea leaves, white pepper, and raspberries, for me, is Vespolina. Bitter tannins only if you make a short maceration. Otherwise, very good tannins, I think. Croatina, dark chocolate, coffee, dark plum, for sure. A little bit of tannins in the mouth, for sure. More fruity, less acidity than the Vespolina, and very salty.
And then what about a grape variety like Uvarera?
Uvarera is a good variety for salami for me, for a brunch time, afternoon salami. But from my point of view, it's not good for long aging. So I try to don't use for long aging wines. So I like Uvarera, but as it is by itself, very easy vinification, traditional stainless steel vats, and I like to drink a little bit cooler during afternoon.
You said that there's 22 or even more grape varieties that have been grown in the region.
Yeah.
So are there other notable grape varieties that have been there in the past?
Yeah, you could find for sure some typical Piedmontese varieties, as are Nebbiolo, some different clones of Nebbiolo, Barbera, Dolcetto, then a little bit of Terrano, then you could find Neretti from Canavese, Neretto Nertala, Neretto Ver, so many different Neretti. And then some very strange and unique varieties, and we are working with the University of Turin to see how they are. One of the most interesting is called Negrera, and maybe in the future we could heard something about. Is from my point of view, is very interesting. We found at the beginning of the beginning only 3 vines in Maserano, and then now is you could now grow. Before was almost impossible.
And are there any grape varieties that have red pulp, like an Alicante Boucher kind of thing?
You could find very few vines. But planted during the 50s and 60s. Before, in the very old vineyard, there are no Tinturier varieties.
So I think one of the things that I hear sometimes about the Alto Piemonte is like, oh, you know, they used to blend the wines with Sicilian wine or wines from the south, you know, Apulia, you know, common tanker trucks, and they would blend it. Is it true or not true, or is it the thought that there's some grape varieties in there that we may not normally encounter that makes people think that it may be true? Like what you are talking about is a lot of grape profiles that I'm personally not familiar with. So I think if I tasted a wine that had some of those in it, and I thought, oh, this is supposed to taste like Nebbiolo, but it doesn't, you know, a very simple view of the Alto Piemonte, I might think that something was getting blended.
I think you are totally right. And this is, I think, in the past, for sure, no blend with Puglia or Sicilia or somewhere else wines. But I worked for a while with a winery in Etna area, with Nerello Mascalese, and was quite clear the connection between Nerello Mascalese taste and Northern Piedmont Nebbiolo taste. Because the aromatic nose, the aromatic in the mouth, is the aromaticity is much more the most important thing. And so 40 years ago, one of the first Italian important writers, Mario Soldati, wrote a book, was Viaggio in Italia. And if you check the page about Northern Piedmont, about Lessona, you could see where just after the Etna area. And he wrote that the taste of the wines remind him to that single place in the world. And this is why maybe a lot of people think about a connection, a commercial connection between Northern Piedmont and some other areas. But I think it was only for the aromatic profile.
Is it also true that that's because of volcanic terroir? Because there is volcanic terroir in the Alto Piemonte, but there's not a lot of volcanic terroir in the Lange.
No, there are no. I don't know volcanic terroir in Lange. So this is for sure the strict connection with Etna. Obviously, are two different soils. Northern Piedmont has a very old volcanic terroir, 800,000 years. Etna is very young, is black. It tastes as a fire, it's different. Northern Piedmont is like a fire, but very far before you could find iron, manganese, potassium taste, saltiness, but it's not burned by the soil. So it's different, I think.
I think one of the reasons I'm really drawn to the Alto Piemonte, I mean, there's a few. There's value. There's back vintages. It seems like something to discover. You know, there's all kinds of reasons. But one of them, for me, I think, is that it holds the possibility that you could try Nebbiolo off some very distinct soil types. You know, because it's very common for people to say, you know, Nebbiolo only succeeds in Barolo and Barbaresco. I mean, it's like said all the time, usually when people are saying it doesn't grow anywhere else in the world, like Australia, that kind of thing. But it implies that it only grows there when we both know that it's in the Alto Piemonte, it's in Lombardia.
Yeah.
So there are these different soil signatures.
For sure.
And for me, tasting Nebbiolo off granite can be similar to sensations that I get when I taste like Syrah off granite.
Yeah, sure.
And that, for me, makes the experience much more complex and interesting.
I think this is one of the most important things about Northern Piedmont. For example, with Colombera and Garella, we have a few parcels, but very close. And you could taste the different soils. In Lessona, it's sandy soil, so very iodine, very light. The nose is very feminine and red, between orange and red. Not 500 meters, but 700 meters far away, there is Bramatera, there is the river in the middle of, and volcanic soil. And that the taste of the same variety, same year of plantation and everything, and the taste is so different. It's much more salty, much more rich in iron in the back mouth, different taste at the nose, for sure more more fruity, a little bit more structure, a little bit more tannins as well. So this is very interesting also for us, because we could find different aspects of the same variety, of the same clone, and we could maybe relearn enough to produce very good wines in Northern Piedmont.
That's interesting that you say that you have to learn, because it, you know, a renaissance is really necessary.
This is, I think, the story of life of a winemaker, of a wine passionate, because... you know that if you make wine, you have not time enough to learn enough to make wine. This is the most important point of view. So if you have a first generation, second generation, third generation, you have your roots and everything. I think one of the most important aspects in Northern Piedmont in the last years were just skipping the 90s. Skipping the fact of the oak, skipping the fact of the fruitiness. So this is why I'm so happy to start in work after 2002, 2003, because we were free, but tasting the wines was so clear the direction we have to find. we have a different unique soil appellation. So you must vinify by itself, and you must taste and see how they could ferment, macerate, and then retaste and learn enough. After now 15 years, I don't know if I was right or I was wrong at the beginning, but anyway, I'm happy about what we learned in the last 15 years.
So it really, for a number of reasons, never went through that period of big oak, big ripeness, doing a lot of things to minimize tannins, trying to be more international, emphasize fruit, make wines that are more approachable. And that whole, you know, 10 or 20 year period never became fashionable in the region, really.
No, luckily no. And this was very important, I think, because we work in cooler climate. We have less tannins than in Lange. In Lange, in Barolo and Barbaresco, you could find some very good wines with very ripe grapes, and you could also find some good wines with a little bit of oakiness at the nose. In Offen Piedmont, it's very, you cannot, because we must be light. We must be very acidic. We must be very fresh. We don't have a lot of tannins, so we cannot cover everything by wood or ripeness. So I think this is, we were lucky to be late.
So in a way, there was no financial investment, so there was no new oak.
No.
And so no. The taste of the place didn't get covered up.
No, exactly. When I started in Bramaterra tasting wines, and the old producer were using only big size of oak cask, big size chestnut cask. And so the taste was maybe a little bit dirty, maybe a little bit bready, but maybe a little bit too tannic. But anyway, for sure not sweet. And so the wines were right after 20 years, 25 years. But anyway, were very typical and very, very unique.
So how did you get into that situation? Here you are, you're 13, 14, 15, you're tasting wine. How did it become a job for you? Because it seems like not everyone who would be interested in wine would necessarily make it to where you've made it, where you're consulting for a number of wineries, you have your own winery, and you're still quite young by regular standards.
I visited tons of produce in Lange and in Tuscany and somewhere else in that period. And so I spend all my money in wine, and I taste a lot of wines. Then every day I think, okay, I have to learn something more. I have to read something more. I read all the books I was able to find in Italy.
Is that a lot or no? Like in the Alto Piemonte, is there a large literature?
No. But I was at Vin Italy, so it was quite easy to find all the books. And so I started knowing some producer, and that was quite easy and natural. Then I visited, obviously, the Northern Piedmont producers. And one day I want to learn something more. I have to try my hand and see how I could prune a vine, I could vinify something. So I started in 1998 working with an old man. He was 88 years old at that period. And we worked together for 4 years. Every single afternoon after school, I was spending time in vine in Maserano, pruning with this old man, and learning something, because it was natural, was clear, was good for me, I think. And the water was not allowed. So after work, you must drink only wine. So I learned the taste of very, very traditional, very handmade wines in Maserano. Then after that, 2002, I started the graduation in university in Turin, Alba, in 2003, and the sommelier and everything. And so step by step was natural. In 2006, I started with Sella, and then was everything became a work.
And Sella was a historical property that had some significant holdings in Lasona and Bramater.
Yeah. Sella was the most important winery in our area, and is owned by one of the most important family. They have a bank, so it was quite strange and unusual. when we started, because I started as director, as Sella, when I was 22. And I became the CEO of Sella in 23 ages. So was very good for me. And I found a lot of good persons there. And I was very free. And I was able to learn enough to work with some other people and some other wineries after.
So how did it end up that you ended up working at Sella? Because, I mean, it is a historical producer of some renown. I mean, and you're a young guy without a lot of experience. So how did that come together for you?
The beginning was strange, it's true, because I had 10 workers and I was 22, and for sure I was the younger one. But the cellar masters and everybody was very helpful with me. And I learned a lot about the tasting of the wines. I learned a lot about the organization of a winery and everything. Then one day the family want to change the president of the company. And so I was a good friend of old president, and everything, just speaking about the political stuff about the winery was different. And so for me, it was not easy to continue work with them during 2013. I prefer to move to a different projects, and so this is why I'm no longer a seller and so on.
But it was a really good situation for you for a while before.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
was great, and I think some very good fermentation we did.
So you made some good wine.
Yeah, not I. I think the combination between the terroir, the old vines, and everything was good enough to be happy.
2010 was the first release of Colombera and Gorella, right?
Exactly. 2010 was an important year. I started with Colombera and Gorella. I started with Le Pianelle in Brusnengo. Was an important year because it was a very classic vintage. And anyway, was good for this kind of sparkliness in Northern Piedmont. Was a light period where you could find place and find people to work with and try to make the best wine as you can. So with Carlo Colombera, Giacomo's father, was quite easy because work together, because we knew each other since 15 years, and he owns some of the best passes, and so with Giacomo is a young guy, and he worked with me during some Sella's harvest. Was very easy and natural start with Giacomo and Carlo.
And I feel like in 2010, which was first vintage for Colombera and Gorella, that was also a vintage that for the Lange was really esteemed. Did that help at all, that you were selling a bottle with a 2010 label on it?
I think have a classic vintage in Piedmont is still the most important thing. 2010 was a unique vintage for me. I work in Northern Piedmont since 2002, and 2010 was the only one without ale at all. And this is one thing. Then was a perfect vintage for Nebbiolo. Long season, early blooming, late harvest was perfect. So for sure, 2010 and having 2010 on the labels is better than having 2007.
And so a long season is preferable where you are? Long season with a little cooler?
Yeah. If you think about the phenological time during a year, normally we have almost the same blooming of in Northern Piedmont and in Lange. The flowering depends a little bit year by year, but anyway, is 3-4 days after in Northern Piedmont than in Lange, but the harvest is still a little bit more late. So you could wait 2-3 weeks. So you have a longer season. You have more time to mature your tannins. You have less alcohol, and you have obviously more acidity because we're in a cooler climate.
I feel like climate change has affected some of the ripening times in the Lange.
Mm-hmm.
Is it showing some effect where you are, or is that still getting the kind of classically styled weather of the past?
No, for sure it's different than in the 60s and the 70s. I don't know exactly before. Before, they were very good vintage, only very warm vintages, as are to 1904, 1921, and some others. During the 60s and 70s, I drank a lot of wines from our area since that period. And the wines are still very bright and very acidic now, but very, very, very late anyway. Are for sure the 1973 Lessona from Celle I tried a few months ago was young, very young now. And so for 30 years it was almost very difficult to drink. Now, with climate change, it's easy to have ripe varieties in Northern Piedmont, but the philosophy of a winery, of a winemaker and everything, if you want to make elegant wines, I think you must stay between 12.50 and 13.50 of alcohol. Otherwise, you will lose a little bit of a right point of view on the Nebbiolo. Obviously, this is much easier in Northern Piedmont than in Lange, but everything is a change.
For Colombert and Gorella, you make Lessona and Bramaterra.
Yeah.
And then you make Costa della Ciesa, which is a blend.
Exactly.
So how should I understand Lessona versus Bramaterra, and then how should I understand the blend together?
Allora, Lessona, for me, as a feminine nose, as a red-orange nose, is typical to find a little bit of spicy raspberries at the nose. And normally we blend a little bit with Vespolina. So normally it's a 90-95 Nebbiolo and 5-10% Vespolina. So you could find a little bit of white pepper as well, the typical nose note of Vespolina. Lessona has a very bright acidity. As one of the most important things about Northern Piedmont is this acidic spiciness in the back mouth. The drinkability of Northern Piedmont wines is one of the most important aspects, I think. Bramaterra is more salty. The nose is a little bit darker, a little bit more violet. You could find a little bit of dark plum, the Croatina, a little bit of chocolate, Croatina, obviously the white pepper, brighter because you have higher percentage. And the taste of the Nebbiolo is different. You taste the iron, you taste the bloodiness. It's more complex. Less feminine, more masculine, with more tannins normally, and a longer finish, maybe. Less iodine, for sure. Costa della Ciesa, in case of Colombera and Gallella, we produce Costa della Ciesa almost only from Bramaterra. So our Costa della Ciesa is a high percentage of Nebbiolo, 60-65, 30 of Vespolina, and then a little bit of Croatina. So we want to have the spiciness, the white pepper of the Vespolina, but obviously we use the second selection grape, so we want to have a very easy wine with a high acidity level, obviously. We work only with long maceration, but obviously the most important grapes are used for Bramaterra Classico and Lessona Classico.
What about some of the other terroirs that you work with your wineries that you consult for? I mean, that must give you a pretty broad range of vineyard sources when you're working as a consultant.
Yeah. Fara is the eastern appellation where I work with Gilberto, and we started together during 2013. As this kind of earthiness at the nose, the wines are very bloody. I think for the volcanic and acidic pH, the volcanic origin and the acidic pH, but also a richer soil, more fertile. So this kind of earthiness, this kind of darker fruit at the nose is the aspect for me for Fara and Sizzano. Gemme, I work with two wineries in Gemme appellation, two different spots. One is Canova, another one is Joppa. And in general, you could find two different kinds of soil. One is high clay percentage, another one is more sandy, morainic, and alluvial. Where you could find acidic pH with clay, you have for sure tannins. Tannins and structure. More structure than, for my opinion, all the other Northern Piedmont appellations. But you need more time in wood. You need also the same winemaking, but you will find less aromas of fruits and more aromas of bloodiness, also at the nose. Very red bloodiness in this case of wine. Alluvial morainic gamma, from my point of view, are very light, very savory, and are, for me, my favorite gamma spots are all in this area. And you could find a lot of balsamic notes, and obviously the acidic pH of the soil helps to have a lot of potassium, so you have a high pH wine, but very interesting as aromas, speaking about the aromas. I will work also in Gattinara, but I have no winery at the moment in Gattinara, but it's still one of the, for sure, best places for make wine in Northern Piedmont. Bramaterra is where I grew up, and I love Bramaterra. Bramaterra is a 7 municipality appellation, so you could find a lot of different soil. Bramaterra is in the middle between Lessona and Gattinara, and the taste is in the middle between Lessona and Gattinara, because you have volcanic soil, very unique porphyric soil, but also sea sandy soil going through Bramaterra going to Lessona. So you could find the expression of Bramaterra very different, I think, at the moment. In general, for me, Bramaterra is the more salty. I cannot say more complex, but anyway, it's complex. The volcanic aspect is maybe higher than in some other different appellation. For some different reason, sometimes it could remind me to Bocca. And this is why I cannot say I prefer Bramaterra or Lessona or another appellation, or just different. And so Lessona is this kind of pure yellow sandy soil with acidic pH, so you have more floralness at the nose, more aromaticity, this iodine sensation in the back mouth, and maybe the softer tannins in Northern Piedmont. Maybe sometimes you could imagine less complex than Bramaterra, but anyway, very elegant.
It seems to me like 10 years ago, and maybe 20 years ago, there was really no great quantity of Lessona producers, and now it seems like there's quite a few.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Paolo DeMarchi made an investment there.
Sure.
But why is it all of a sudden that, is it just that they were only in Italy or not exported, or why is it that I see a lot more Lessona now than in the past?
When I started in Sella in 2006, you could find bottles of Lessona only. 95% of the cases are Sella, or a little bit Massimo Clerico, because it was these were the two producers of Lessona, or just two producers, not everybody else. So now, then, obviously, Paolo DeMarchi came, and then some other producer, La Prevostura, who I work with, and now there are 10 producers in Lessona in few years, because if you think about in 10 years, 11 years, is nothing in wine world. So you were unable to find Lessona because it was just impossible to find Lessona, and the market was almost nothing, because Sella sold all the wines to the bank customers, so the Lessona doesn't exist before. So now it's in the market because there are 10 producers, a little bit more wine, but also the combination between more wineries and different taste and different approach.
Because it seems like when, you know, a region is really hitting, it takes more than one player often.
A wine area must have a lot of producer, a lot of vineyard, a lot of different wines.
At Colombert and Gorilla, you've done 10, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah.
What have you seen in that period of time? I mean, what's changed, what's different, and how are the vintages changed?
Very different vintages. Speaking about my experience, 2010 and 2013 are incredible. I really like these two vintages because they're very elegant, classic, high acidity level. So if you ask me as a taste, for sure, it's not about winemaking, it's just about the taste, because the wines want to go somewhere and I must follow the wine. Obviously, the vintage aspect is the most important thing, maybe, but 2010 and 2013 were so clear the direction. Obviously, 10 and 13 were cooler, very classic. 12 was, I think, a little bit similar to 09, a little bit more fruity, but also with a little bit bitter tannins in the back mouth for some dry and hot days during July. 2011 was an easier vintage, and sometimes have a easy, warm vintage could help a new customer to be introduced in Northern Piedmont.
What is the winery protocol? Grapes come in?
Yeah.
What do you do at Colombert and Gorilla?
we destem all the grapes, and we put in general for fermentation of Bramatera and Costella Sesia in concrete tank, so all traditional concrete tank. We don't add yeast. We move a little bit during the first 2 days just to take a little bit of color, and then we taste and we decide if it's the right time for rank out, rank over the Lestage. There is not a protocol. There is just an idea about the taste, and that's all. We want to stay during fermentation with medium-low temperature. I work between 22 and 28, I prefer. I have no fridge at Colombera, so I have to move the wine. I don't want to have a lot of oxygen. I want to save more CO2 as I can, because CO2 is our richness. If I'm able to keep more CO2, I'm able to keep more freeness. I'm able to use less sulfites during the aging. I'm able to be more safer during the aging. So normally the technique is very easy. I prefer long maceration, but I need ripe grapes. And ripe grapes came from only from good vineyard. After the end of the fermentation, normally we move a little bit less the wines to be able to save the CO2. And then we taste and we decide the final maceration. And that's all. Then malactic in stainless steel or in concrete, and then aging in used barrique in this case, because it was an old winery but new winery. And so the beginning, you must use used barrique for different vinification, different vineyard aspect. You don't want to blend everything. And also, you have not enough money to buy cask, and that's another important stuff.
So for me, the real difference with Colombera and Gorilla compared to some other producers in the region is the level of reduction that I sense in the wines, which I think is very related to what you were saying about CO2 covering and trying to keep that layer there, and then using a little bit of steel at times to kind of keep the texture maybe a little tighter. So when did you decide that that was important to you, and why is it important to you? Because when you look at some of the other producers in the region, sometimes the texture is much more loose. There's much more exposure to oxygen.
You must taste. The only way is taste. Taste during the fermentation, taste during the maceration, and taste during the aging. You cannot follow a protocol. Every vintage is different. Every wine is different. But if you taste the wine and you think what you like, or you are able to say, I don't like this. Okay, this is the only way. Maintain the wine in reduction was very clear at Sella, because I don't want to lose this fruitiness. I am falling in love with raspberries and small strawberries. I want to keep this kind of nose in the wine, but I am not a roto fermenter technique. So I want to be very traditional, but I want to find a way to keep this kind of freshness. And was only, for me, the reduction. And we are lucky because working with Nebbiolo is not Dolcetto, so you could keep the wines in reduction, and your wine will be bright enough, will be not dirty, will be safe.
So you feel that reduction showcases both aromas and the flavors differently for Nebbiolo?
Yeah, I think so. Nebbiolo and Vespolina as well. There are so many good Nebbiolo from our area and some other areas. For sure, beautiful grapes, but oxidative. Your nose is a little bit too sweet and not enough fruity. And so I'm sorry, because and you could find the same in Nerello Mascalese in the Etna. If you taste from the tank, you could drink incredible wines. If you taste after aging, you could drink so many not perfect wines.
So really you were looking for more freshness?
Yeah, at the nose, yes.
You mentioned Sella where you worked, but are there a number of other people that you don't consult for working in more reduction?
Some of the best wines from Northern Piedmont are working in some different approach, but in reduction. For example, Sperino, I could tell. I don't know Antoniolo, but I really like the wines, so I have to learn something more about their vinification.
So is there a historical precedent for that kind of winemaking? Like if you go back to the 19th century or before the advent of stainless steel, is there...
This is a problem and having lose our roots. So was natural think about this kind of style, this kind of taste, but was only a glass, was not speaking about an historic process or something. Was just because if you want to have a long maceration, if you believe, if you trust in your grapes, you must work with long maceration. If you want to work with long maceration, you must keep the CO2. And if you keep the CO2, the brightness at the nose is so clear. And so at the end of the day, you want to save this kind of nose. We try to work only for the nose at the end of the day.
So how do you think that nose is going to evolve? Is it going to be bright like that in 20, 30, 40 years of bottle age?
I will tell you in 20, 30 years.
But I mean, you're making a bet that something's going to happen, right? I mean, you're making an intention that you're going to make wine like this. So do you have a sense of what that's going to end up as?
When I started in 2006, 2007 at Sella, we had some different approach to the vinification with Gianluca, obviously. Very traditional maceration, or very, not very, very modern, but medium, normal. So maybe 14 days of maceration, then malactic in wood, 2,500 liters Livonian hook, and then everything. My approach was maybe 36 days of maceration, and then malactic in stainless steel, and then aging wood as well. And now, after 10 years, this wine, I think, for my taste, I still prefer 100% of the times the long macerated one. So, in general, this kind of nose, this kind of taste is still very interesting for me. Because, it obviously, it's different. It's less fruity now, but the brightness at the nose is clear also today. I hope in 20 years it will be almost the same.
And what about the influence of concrete? I've seen, as we talked about, a lot of big concrete tanks in the region. You use concrete in your fermentation.
Concrete is a beautiful material for make wine, I think, because it's a very good during fermentation. It's hard because if you are, we don't use fridge, so you must be very safe with the temperature because it's very easy to be too warm. But it's good because we have to age the wine in wood, and for sure it's important, but sometimes you need to move a little bit because it's going too fast. Maybe this vintage is going too fast and I need to make it slower. And using concrete is quite ideal. Obviously, I work also with stainless steel, and the effect in the wine is not far away. But with concrete in that period, during the aging or at the end of aging, is one of the ideal things, I think.
So you mentioned that you really work towards aromatics. Does concrete affect those aromatics?
No, it helps to keep in reduction. But no, putting the same wine in stainless steel or concrete with the same temperature, you have obviously a little bit different differences at the nose, but are not huge differences from my point of view.
It's interesting to me how much descriptors like bloodiness and saltiness come up for the Alto Piemonte. And I've certainly experienced that too, but those aren't regular descriptors for me when I'm talking about the wines of the Lange.
Yeah, because we work in acidic pH soil, so you have a lot of minerals, and you could find a lot of minerals coming up in your wine. So in general, you have higher potassium, higher manganese, and higher iron. And the iron taste is for sure more bloody than some other minerals. So this is why a lot of words are about iron or bloodiness or saltiness or sourness. So in general, I could say this is one of the most important aspects thinking about Northern Piedmont. We work in a cooler climate, so we expect high acidity level. But working with acidic pH soils, you have a little bit higher pH in the wine. So this is why the wines from Northern Piedmont are salty and not acidic. This is one of the most important aspects, I think.
A lot comes down to the pH of the soils, which is just very different.
Exactly. The pH of the soil is our richness for sure.
Not knowing that previously, I think my temptation was always to think like maybe it's a different clone of Nebbiolo, or maybe it's one of these other grape varieties that's blended in. You know, because in the Lange, you often hear about Mike versus Lampia, and you know, so I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe there's something different in the Alto Piemonte that's normal to plants. Do you think it's the same Nebbiolo, or
I think at the moment we are thinking now, not all, but almost all Nebbiolo from Northern Piedmont are Lampia or Miquette. And so we are speaking exactly of the same variety. Historically, for sure, was different. You could find a lot of different clones of Spanna. And I hope in the future to be able to have some more local clones. But anyway, now we are speaking about the same variety. And why I speak so much about the soil is why, for me, is the most important aspect and is where we are maybe now able to learn something more. And then secondary, for sure, the varieties, the different varieties, addiction of Croatina and Spolina, but it's much more important the soil aspect than the different varieties, I think.
So one place that hasn't come up in this conversation, and you don't consult there, could be a reason why, is Caremma. And I have heard there that it's actually like a different kind of Nebbiolo.
Caremma is a beautiful place. I love Caremma and I love Caremma wines. Historically was not considered Alto Piemonte, which is why I was unable to speak about Caremma. For sure, Roberto Ferrante is a good friend, and for sure I love his wines. But Caremma is strictly connected to Valle d'Aosta, to Donnas, and so to the Picutener clone, anyway. Historically, the connection between Valle d'Aosta and Canavese and Turin was clear, but Alto Piemonte was the area between Biella, Novara, so the old Novara province. Now are Biella, Vercelli and Novara, but anyway, the area between Lessona and Fara Sizzano. This was the Alto Piemonte. Caremma is very close to us, but historically was not connected to us. So different, completely different soil, completely different technique of pruning. This is why normally we are not considering Caremma in Northern Piedmont.
Speaking about a different kind of pruning, I mean, when you go through Barolo Barbaresco, a lot of things are trellis on wires. When I go into places like Bocca, I've seen
Maggiorina,
something that's like unlike anything else I've ever seen. So yeah. What are the different styles of the Alto Piemonte in terms of handling a vine, and are they specific to certain subzones?
In general, now, obviously, a lot of vines are just pruned in Guyot and are in lines. That's fine. But historically, you could find a lot of Maggiorina through the area between Bocca, Novara, and Bramaterra also.
And what is that?
Maggiorina is a local pruning system with three vines in the middle and is like a small pergola in general. It's wider than normal, and you have three vines in the middle of with 14 branches around. And it's very interesting. It was used as usual for the Croatina. And the new system of Angiolina was created by one of the most important architects. He was from Bocca and the name was Antonelli. So he created this kind of system, very, very unique and very particular. And you could find vines pruned at Maggiorina in Bocca and Bramaterra and also Gemme and Fara. It is quite typical, and I worked in Maggiorina for 4 years. I had one vineyard in Brusnengo and was Maggiorina when I was 16, 20 years old. And after that, I knew why I would prefer line than Maggiorina.
Why is that?
It's horrible to work. It's just is less tall than me, and it's hard to be less tall than me. But anyway, it's as it is. You must be below the branches every hour of your work. You must cut the grass and do everything below the branches. So you must spend all your time going curve.
You have to bend down a lot.
Yeah. And so it's very hard to work, I think. But was good, and now is good, because you could find some Maggiorina, very old Maggiorina. So now the grapes are such beautiful. We have some Maggiorina in all the area, and at the moment we are keeping because are 80, 90 years old, and the grapes of Croatina or Nebbiolo are perfect.
This is a very far-flung example, but on Santorini, the volcanic island of Greece, when you taste Mavrodragono that's been trellised, and then you taste it when it's been grown on the ground in the circular formation, the wines are very different.
Yeah, sure.
Like, the trellised Mavrodragono is much more on the fruit, and then the Mavrodragono that's grown on the ground is probably thicker skins.
Yeah, sure.
More on that kind of
character. Yeah, and everything. Yeah.
Even if the winemaking was roughly the same, it's the character of the grape, I think. This is my assumption. Yeah, yeah. So I was wondering if something similar might be happening when you move wines on the wire in Nebbiolo in the Alto Piemonte.
I have no exactly one answer. I have some different aspects I could consider. Maggiorina was used, that's for sure. And I could like the Maggiorina for the Croatina because it's very wide and Croatina needs to be very ripe. So normally I would prefer. It helps if you have ale because the grapes are all below the leaves. That's fine. But historically, the Nebbiolo was not pruned at Maggiorina. It's not 20th century of history in Maggiorina and only 100 years in going through Guyot. So, for example, in Lessona, it's true you could find some few Maggiorina, but historically, since 90 years, you could find different system of lines, a different system of pruning, but anyway, not in Maggiorina. I think now we are considering Maggiorina also because all the vines are very old, and so for sure the grapes are better and better. I will tell you when I will be able to have one vineyard planted by Maggiorina now and one vineyard planted by lines, normal lines now. You are right. For example, from my point of view, Narello Mascalese in Etna is a different taste, grown as Alberello or in line. And for sure, I prefer 100% of the time Alberello. But I don't know this aspect, how it could be for the Nebbiolo in North Piemont.
Sometimes people say with the Maggiorina that when they put the vines together like that, that the different grape varieties actually share genetic material over time, where, you know, the Croatina and the Nebbiolo kind of do a handshake and they give each other something.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You could, because having these three vines in the middle, the roots are still very close and you could have some combination. This is why it's very easy to have some problems of disease because of the combination of roots and everything is a little bit harder than in a normal system.
So speaking about disease, I mean, there are parts of the Piemonte where you hear a lot about Flavicenza dorata and other disease or insect pressures. Are there disease or insect pressures that are on the horizon for the Alto Piemonte?
It's not an easy place because we have a lot of rain. We have rain around twice than in La Mora, which is the rainiest place in Barolo. But we work in lighter soils, so normally we are quite dry. Speaking about disease, for sure we have, for the rain, problem with Peronospora and Oidium Classic. We have not a lot of problem with Flavescenza dorata, luckily, because Nebbiolo is not so easy to have problem with Flavescenza. But we have some problem with Flavescenza dorata, with Croatina and Erbaluce. For sure, it's not easy, but for us, luckily, it's just a small percentage of total amount of vineyard and total amount of grapes. So speaking about Vespolina and Nebbiolo is not a problem. We must be very, very safe only about the botrytis and the Peronospora. Is much more important the work in the vineyard about the canopy management and everything than some other kind of problem at the moment.
So in terms of serving the wines, you see a lot of older vintages still, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from the Alto Piemonte still kind of around in the market. Sometimes I'm not sure what I should do. Should I decant it? Should I double decant it? Should I pop and pour it? I don't always know. And obviously there's different terroirs and there's different producers, different styles involved, but I have some sense of how I like to approach Barolo. So I think it's possible to come up with some guidelines of the Alto Piemonte, but I don't really know.
I prefer to pop and pour darkly because I don't want to have a lot of oxygen coming through the wines and just lose the nose. And this was, for my opinion, good for very old Lessona, Marmatera, Gattinara, Gamme, more than 90 years old, or good for some other vintages until 1958, maybe, was one of the last very warm and very good vintages. During the 60s and 70s, I think it's much better give a little bit more air, because the wines were so late and so acidic that for sure are still a little bit closed. So in general, the approach is nowhere except the 60s and the 70s, I think.
And is that because of an approach to lees? Like, were they doing different things with lees contact?
I think was the period with not a lot of good winemaking, very traditional winemaking, but without rules, without good winemakers. And so you could have a lot of great 60s wines from Lange, but it's not easy to have a few good wines, a few good Northern Piedmont wines from the 60s, I think. Because the winemaking technique was very rustic. And so you could find a lot of tannicity and a lot of tannins and a lot of acidity in the wines. And I think is why I would prefer now to decant and wait a little bit normally.
And how has the market changed for the wines? I mean, I feel like at Sella, you had some contact with the export market. Now you're working with a number of small different wineries that presumably have more or less success in the export market. And you have your own project, so you see where the wine goes. What is the situation for the market for these kind of wines?
I think everything is changing quite fast. And I will not speak a lot about Italy, because we have not a lot of market in Italy anyway. At the moment, I really like the US market in general, and I really like the fact that everybody tastes the wines and decides if I will buy or I will not buy something, and I will tell you why I will do that or not. In Italy, we are buying brands or labels or something, or points, or Trebicchieri, or Cinque Pecore, but finally, we have to taste the wines and decide. And in US, you do that, and I really like this. Now we are, anyway, 122 wineries, more vineyard than before, and I think also the quality is improving a little bit because we are speaking more and more about the wines and about the technique between us. And this is the only way to find finally the collaboration and then also work, I think, well the market.
Cristiano Garella thinks so. Decisions about wine should be based on taste. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Cristiano Garella of Colombera and Garella in the Alto Piemonte, as well as several consulting projects in that same area.
All Drink to That is hosted and produced by myself, Levy Dalton. Aaron Scala has contributed original pieces. Editorial assistance has been provided by Bill Kimsey. The show music was performed and composed by Rob Moose and Thomas Bartlett. Show artwork by Alicia Tenoyan. T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and so much more, including show stickers, notebooks, and even gift wrap, are available for sale if you check the show website, alldrinktothatpod.com. That's I-L-L, drinktothatpod.com, which is the same place you'd go to sign up for our email list or to make one of the crucially important donations that help keep this show operating. You can donate from anywhere using PayPal or Stripe on the show website. Remember to hit subscribe or to follow this show in your favorite podcast app, please. That's super important to see every episode. And thank you for listening. This episode was made possible by Vinitaly, the world's largest wine fair, held each year in Verona, Italy.